Good morning, everyone. You've all passed the navigation test to find this room this morning, at least. So it's not the easiest room to find. Let's go ahead and get started. So we're here this morning to talk about API apps and logic apps. How many people have actually had a look at the preview? A few people. So basically, we're going to go in and look at what the app services, the whole idea behind the app services is. We're going to look at specifically API apps and how to create them. We're going to look at logic apps, go through creating a logic app. And then we're going to have a little bit of tips and tricks around some of the stuff you're going to do. But do realize the API apps, logic apps is still in preview, subject to change at any moment. So they've got stuff out there now. It will change before it ends up in the GA version of it. And a little bit of a summary there. For those who don't know me, I'm a integration MVP for Microsoft. I've been involved in BizTalk primarily since about 2004. So I've been involved in the MVP program. I'm a principal consultant for Mexi Consulting based out of Melbourne. And I've been over here a few times. A few of the people that are involved in the integration group here in Auckland, we had a integration day back in July, where we went over some of the preview of this and some of the BizTalk stuff also. So let's go ahead and jump into the app services. So the whole idea is they've combined a few of the existing Azure resources into app services. So, and we'll look at a little bit of the history of integration first. So there's a few of us in the crowd I know that were around when VB.NET came out, C#, all of the .NET technologies came out. I was actually doing integration before those technologies, so a little bit of VB, VB6. My original stuff was C++ 2.0, so a while ago, and that was after spending 10 years in the mainframe world. So, but if we look at what we've done for integration. Integration's not something new. We've been doing integration for a long, long time. So basically, we started out with pure code. We'd have gone and had a look at BizTalk Server. So that was an on-premise integration middleware. Still is very popular. Then they started doing some stuff in Azure. So Microsoft released Azure. And the initial offering of Azure had BizTalk services in it. Didn't have a lot to do with BizTalk at that time, not a lot of the BizTalk functionality, but a little bit. Then that got renamed to .NET Services. That lasted a little while, and then it came back as BizTalk Services about probably 2 years ago. And now that has turned into Azure App Services. So we'll dig into what that looks like in terms of if you're familiar with BizTalk or something like that, what it looks like. We'll also look like at if you're a .NET developer and have been doing stuff in .NET, we'll have a look at that. So one of the big things that has moved people to the cloud is this whole notion of hybrid integration. So a lot of the stuff that I did early on in integration was all inside of your own company, between the systems that you have inside of your own company. But now what's changed mostly is where your users are. I mean, how many people in the crowd have applications that need to interact with mobile devices? A few people? Yep. So the big thing that's changed there is where are your users? So your users are out in the cloud. So you need to be closer to your users, easier to access for the users, because we still have a lot of corporate firewalls and stuff like that make that work a lot harder. Also, other services we want to consume, a lot of those in the cloud. If we're using some of the SaaS solutions like Salesforce and things like that, those are already in the cloud. So if we have to come all the way down on-premise and then back out, that adds a lot to the work we're doing. Also, the location of data. We're putting more and more stuff in the cloud with the SQL Azure and different things like that. We've got a lot more data in the cloud that we need to get access to. So if we're already running our integration in the cloud, that makes it a lot easier. And the other thing is, how many compute resources do we have? How easy is it in your internal environment to get a new virtual machine spun up and get particular software installed on that? That's becoming harder and harder. I mean, virtualization helped that a lot, but it's still, we've got that set of people that we have to go through to do that. So with that hybrid integration, we now have the ability to stand up those machines in Azure and be able to leverage that capacity that we have there. So enough about that. Let's look specifically at our app services. So how many people have used the websites in Azure? So fair few people. So one of the good things about the app services is they've brought websites into this. So they've renamed them to web apps. But there's a lot of really good technology that we can leverage around websites. Mobile apps, so, and they're still playing around with what they want to call mobile apps. They've bounced a couple of ideas out there. For at the moment, it's mobile apps. But that's basically interacting with your mobile devices. Then they've introduced the two new ones, so API apps and logic apps. And we're going to concentrate on those two today. But API apps are based on the websites. And the webs that makes it really nice, because by being based on the websites, we can use that learning we've had around websites. How many people have interactively debugged their website with Visual Studio? So that functionality is also present with our API apps. And we'll have a look at how we do that. And for those of us in the crowd that have been involved in BizTalk for a long time, we would have killed for being able to go into Visual Studio and do an F5 debug. So that's one of the things that we get out of that. And then our logic apps are basically putting together a series of API apps. We'll see how we put that together. So now we'll jump into our API apps. And basically, our API apps are web API based. So for all of the .NET developers that have done stuff with websites and web API, you should be right at home building your API apps. For the BizTalk guys, it is a little bit of a jump because we're used to working in the tools around BizTalk where we basically don't write a lot of code as code. We do a lot of configuration and a lot of drag and drop. But we'll see that we do have some pre-built API components that we can use out there. And again, it leverages that website container. So we've got that container out there. We can do our debugging. We know how to manage the configuration settings and things like that of our website container, and we can use that. And the nice thing about it is we've got a bunch of reusable components. So Microsoft supplies some, vendors are going to supply some of these reusable components so that we can, just with our logic app, orchestrate how those are going to work. So in the BizTalk terminology, our API apps become our orchestration shapes. If you're familiar with that, the template from BizTalk where you drag a shape on that design surface, it's going to be very familiar to you being able to pick your API app and configure it, and then pass the data between those. Passing data is a little bit more specific. You have to pass the data, where in the BizTalk orchestration or something, you had data that was global to that, and you could access that from the different shapes. We'll see that it's a little bit more declarative in our API apps. Now, where are we going to be able to get API apps? So Microsoft has put a bunch of them out there, a lot of the BizTalk shapes. So we've got transformation shapes and things like that. We've got the EDI. So if you've worked with EDI before, we've got that translation from EDI to XML that we can do in the cloud. We've got some AS2 components, things like that. So a lot of those things that BizTalk made it easier to do on-premise, we've got in the cloud that we can leverage. And also, there's going to be vendors that put their API apps out there for you to use. There's going to be a marketplace that's got a few different ways of charging. They haven't completely locked that down yet. You might be able to just buy an API app to add to your application. You might have to buy an API app and pay by transaction. So they're still working on some of those models around how they charge. There's going to be people like myself. In BizTalk 2004, I created a POP3 adapter because there wasn't one in BizTalk at the time. There's going to be community people that add their API apps to the marketplace, and those are going to be out there, typically with the community free to use, so you can use those however you want. So we'll be building those things that initially we see missing from the offerings and add those to the marketplace. Now, and the really interesting one is, okay, if I'm using API apps and logic apps inside of my enterprise, I may not want to make those API apps that I'm building for the enterprise public. So they're looking at having a enterprise marketplace that will be accessible by the rest of your developers in your enterprise, but not accessible by the general public. So that way you'll have a place where you can put those API apps for all the rest of your developers in your enterprise to leverage and reuse. And the last but not least one is you can build your own. And that's what we're going to do today. We're going to start off building our own. I do want to, I'll set it up a little bit. The demo I'm going to do today, end-to-end, is leveraging Visual Studio Online. How many people here use Visual Studio Online? A few people. One of the new features they've added to Visual Studio Online not long ago was a service hook. And basically what you can do with that is you can say, when somebody updates a work item in Visual Studio Online, I want a message dropped onto Service Bus that says they've updated this work item. And then basically the demo we're going to do today is got a Service Bus connector in the Logic app that picks up that message, passes it to a custom API. That custom API reads that JSON message, extracts the URL for the work item, calls off to the Visual Studio Online, grabs the attachment that's in that work item, brings it down, and then checks out to see whether it's approved or committed. If it's approved, it will then download that on-premise via the file connector. So basically delivers it down to inside of your enterprise if you want to. This could be a scenario where you have external developers working on stuff and you need to have them ship stuff down to your environment, something like that. So, and then if it's just committed, it actually sends an email to the person that's in charge of bringing that down, and they can basically go out to Visual Studio Online and approve that work item, and then it'll download. So that gives you the basis of what we're working on in the demo. And let's hop over to the demo machine now. And basically what we want to look at is that here's our Azure portal. I'm just going to show you what that message looks like coming out of Visual Studio Online. It is a fairly large message. Don't worry about reading it. If I need to show you something, I'll zoom in on it. But basically, it's got all the details about that work item that's been updated. If you're interested, there's also one of the other really nice hooks that they've got is when a build completes, it tells you the build's completed and its status. So if it's successful, you can do the same thing. You could go out and download the zip file that contains the artifacts from that build. So that would be a way to actually deliver your build to maybe your release manager. If you're not using any of the release manager tools, you could do it that way. So let's hop back over to our the portal. And then we'll also quickly look. This is just the Visual Studio Online. I've got a work item, and it's got an attachment, and we'll be updating that. To set up the service hooks, you go in here, and I've got a work item updated service hook that sends it off to a Service Bus queue. Let's go into Visual Studio now. So what we're going to do now is we're going to create our own API app to do the work that we need to do. Because we could use some of the built-in APIs in the Logic app, but Visual Studio Online has got some fairly custom tokens that you need to pass it to access the data. So I decided to do that in a API app. So what we go here, we go and do a new project. And we go up to web, make it a ASP.NET web application. And let me just grab the name I want to make it. Give it a name. And then you notice it's a little bit generic at the moment. It's just a web application. But what we'll see is we get another screen here. And there, if you install the, I think it's at least the Azure 2.6 SDK. I think this machine's running 2.7 right now. So basically, we do the Azure API app preview. And then we go OK. And that is going to go off and build a web API project. And it's going to add the stuff we need to for the API apps to it. We have it creates a default controller for us. And I'm just going to go ahead and delete that. So let's get rid of the default controller. And I thought about this. There's a fair bit of code that I have to put in here. And I thought you watching me half the talk typing code into this was probably not going to be the best use of time. So I did a little bit of playing around, and I've actually got some NuGet packages that I'm going to use that's going to insert the code for me. And the first one is one of the guys from QuickLearn over in the U.S. has created a library that makes it easier to mark up your web API so that you get the right metadata exposed inside the Logic App Designer. So I'm going to add that first, and that's in... He called it T-Rex. So I'll install the T-Rex NuGet package. And if anybody were around the early BizTalk 2004, they used T-Rex as one of the releases that they did. So depends on if you were around early. Okay, and it's wanting the password for my private NuGet. Hold on a second. So we'll do that. And then what I'll do is I've got a couple of other NuGet packages. That JSON file you saw in that email, basically I went, there's a website out there that'll convert JSON to C# classes. So I went out and did a convert to that. So let's go ahead and hopefully this will finish installing. Come on. Okay, I'll just give that a second. So what we're going to do is I've got a NuGet package that brings down the class for the work item. And then I've got another NuGet package that brings down my inputs and outputs for my API app and the code to actually run and go off and get the item out of Visual Studio. So that one's finished. What I'll do, I'll go up here, I'll go to my public NuGet store, and then I'm going to look for the VSO. I've got a VSO work item update NuGet package, so I'll install that. And what that adds to our project is just a C# class that describes everything that's in that JSON object that they send me. Then I'll go in and I'll add the other NuGet, and that's in my private NuGet, and that's called demo. Come on. course, the internet's working really well when you're doing internet-based demos. So, and also, just to give you a hint, that machine that I'm running the demos off of is a VM running in Azure in Australia. So basically, there's a pre-made template out there for Visual Studio 2015. So you can spin that up, and basically, it's got everything you need. Come on. And of course, that's not going to need to do it. So let's give it another second. So basically, what's in this is an input and an output model. Okay. So I'll do an install. So what that's added to my project is an input. So basically we have, let's zoom in on that a little bit. So I'm taking in the content. So this is going to be that JSON message, and then it's encoding. And then I've got a couple of things that are dynamic in here. When do you want to send the attachment, and when do you want to send the email? So what I do is I put the status of the work item in there. So when it's approved, I want to send the attachment. When it's committed, I want to send the email. And then I need to pass my Visual Studio Online user token and the user ID that I want to use for that. So let's go back. Then my output, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass the work item status. So is it committed, or is it approved, or is it new? Could be any of those. I'll pass the attachment. And I'll also create an attachment file name. So I'll take the file name that's in the attachment that's attached to Visual Studio Online. And just so I could keep repeating the process, I added the work item instance GUID to the front of the file name, just so that I could drop it down multiple times. Also, I pass the email body. What do I want to send them in the email? At the moment, in this demo, all I'm passing them is the JSON file. It's a bit ugly, but it gives me the just a really easy way to do that. And then I pass it the output type. Am I outputting the email, or am I outputting the attachment? And what we'll do is we'll use that later on in our logic app to do some conditional flow in the logic app, whether it's an email or whether it's an attachment. And we'll have a quick look at the controller we created. So here's our work item update controller. And basically, we do a little bit of work with this. And of course, the JSON object coming out of the Visual Studio Online doesn't play well with Visual Studio because it's got some invalid characters. Don't know why they would do that. So they've got fields that go system dot something, or they've got fields that go Kanban dot something. So I've just had to go in there. Before I do the deserialize the JSON to the C# class, I have to go in there and update some of the values inside of the JSON file. Not sure why they would do that. I mean, they could have expected somebody to want to create the C# class out of that. Then I do a deserialize. Then I check to see if it's a what type, whether it's a work item updated, if it matches that type. And then I go down and just do some processing on that. I did find that to pass that zip file that I'm downloading to the next step of my API app, I needed to Base64 encode it. It did not like me passing the binary to the next step of the next web API, basically, or the API app. So I've Base64 encoded it. The good thing is the file connector, the file connector supports the Base64 encoding, the email tools and things like that. So hopefully this is going to come back in a second. Come on. So basically that supports the Base64 encoding. So that's pretty much what I wanted to show you, except I needed to deploy it. So there we go. We're good. Okay. So what I've done, it's always the danger of when you're doing things across the internet. So we'll go here back to the portal, and I'll browse all. I'll go look at my existing API apps. I don't have an API app out here, but what I can do is I'm going to go ahead and add an API app. You can do this through Visual Studio. It just takes a little bit longer. So what I want to do is I'm going to create the API app that I'm going to upload my code into. And I just need to grab the name of it. And then it's in my app service plan and my resource group. Let's see how long it takes, because this has been variable. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it almost happens instantly. Again, it depends on what updates they're rolling out when, because we got, I think the weekend we had the integration thing, they were rolling out updates, and it was taking forever to do some of this. You can also see over here on the notification, see the little dots going. That means it's still running. And you can click on that, and you see that it's creating the API app. So we'll give it just another second to do that. But in the meantime, what we'll do is we'll hop back to Visual Studio. And then what we do is we go up here and we hit publish. We tell it it's a web API, and it's going to be looking for that to have finished. Let's just wait for that to finish. And then we can select that existing API app to copy into. We can do a new, and it basically... The interesting thing it does, though, if you hit new, it goes off and does the exact same thing I did in the portal, and then comes back and you have to do a publish again. So it doesn't publish it all at once. So there we go. We've got it published there. And then I'll probably have to cancel out of that, do that. And then there's my work item updated that I just created out there. So I do that. I say OK. It's downloading the publishing settings for me. So just like it would with a website or web app. There's my publishing settings. I do need to change one thing, because later on I'm going to do a debug. So I just need to change it from the release to a debug deployment. And then I go next, and basically I publish. Now, early on in the preview, to use your own web API in or API app in a Logic app, you had to mark it as public anonymous. They have fixed that now. It can stay internal and still work. So they've only fixed that in the last couple of weeks, I think. So, and it comes up, and that's why it comes up with that. It says that it can't actually show you what the API app is because it's set to internal. So it's not available for anybody calling off the internet. Okay, so let's go back to our slides. That basically has got our API app up there. Now we're going to talk about the Logic app we want to build around that API app. So a Logic app is basically a collection of API apps. So how many people worked with Windows Workflow? So you could have done things in Windows Workflow where you have a .NET component you call off to, you could put some code in a code shape, and then they got rid of the code shape because they went to a pure XAML model. So you had to call off to a service or something like that. So with the API apps, Logic apps, the only way you can do code in there is to create your own API app. There are a couple of samples out on the GitHub repository for the Logic apps that will let you run C# code and JavaScript code in an API app. So it's an API app just to run that. Like if you're familiar with the expression shape in BizTalk, it is an abysmal code editor. You do not want to write code in that little window. It's about two lines long, and it's just going to take you. You're going to have to write the code somewhere else and paste it in, or create your own API app that does that code. And it's a workflow. The only a little bit difficult thing is that we're used to a workflow coming top down, like we see in BizTalk and like we saw in Windows Workflow. The workflow designer we'll see in the Logic apps is left to right. And it's a little bit hard to control when you have decision shapes and stuff. It will move things above and below each other. So to give you that either one of those could run type impression on the workflow. Hopefully they'll fix that. So a little bit of the differences between the existing technologies like Windows Workflow or BizTalk is that all the components that you can use in your Logic app need to be API apps. So, and that is that a flavor of the web API with a particular swagger done there. Our Logic apps can be push, can be pull, can be repeating, and can be manual. You could have a Logic app out there that you don't want to automatically happen. And they have just recently released an SDK that makes it a lot easier to fire off those manual ones. So you have a process. You may drop a file up into Azure Storage, and part of that process is you kick off a Logic app to basically run the processing for that file. Especially if it's something that happens once or twice a week, you probably don't want it sitting there polling for that activity. You might want to manually kick that off. And again, using the SDK, you could put that into a website where somebody uploads a file and then they hit process. So all of those type of things. The nice thing about the fact it's on the web app type base is that I can debug it very, very well. I don't have to worry about a new type of debugging. I can use that debugging straight from Visual Studio. And again, because I'm building my own code, I've got that extensibility there. I can do what I need to do in the code. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go off and create the Logic app part of our application. So this time, it would be nice if I could go into Visual Studio and I had the designer. I can go into Visual Studio, but I have to code it in JSON. And I'm not sure about you guys, but it's not the most friendly thing to code in, because you don't really have a lot of help about what you're trying to do. We will look a little bit later on at some of the PowerShell commands that will extract the Logic app that we've built, and we can then use it to create the Visual Studio project based on the resource template. But for now, what we're going to do is we'll go in here to the Azure portal. We'll go back to our Browse All. We'll go down here to Logic Apps. Oh, thank you. Sorry about that. There we go. Sorry about that. We'll go in and we'll see that we don't have any Logic Apps. Okay, this is an interesting one I found doing these demos. I created my Logic App name. I did all the work on it, created it, and then I said, okay, I'll delete it so I can recreate the same one when I do the talk. Guess what? You can recreate it, and it comes back exactly like you left it. They're not cleaning something up. So I could, if I made it the same name as I made it yesterday, it would be all done. So a little bit of a bug there. So we'll go in here, we'll add. So in this one, I'm going to have to put the a 2 at the end of it to make up for the 2 that I've tried to do already. And so I go in there, work item updated, my subscription, or my app service plan, and my resource group. Hit create. I could have gone in there and went straight into the editor to start building it, but I like to go in, create the Logic app, and then go back into it and edit the designer. So we just have to wait for that guy to create. Any questions at the moment while we're waiting for that to create? So that's going off there and creating our Logic app. And then what we'll do is we'll go in and we'll edit the actions and triggers in there. And we'll see some of the Microsoft supplied components that we can use. And then we'll see the particular components from my resource group. So we'll see the ones I've uploaded so far. To make the demo a little bit quicker, I've actually pre-created a file connector, because when you create the file connector, what you need to do is go into the machine that you want those files to be dropped on and install a ClickOnce application that sets up some stuff in IIS so that it can do that. It uses Service Bus Relay to bring down that file. I've been trying to do it on one of our clients, and I can't get enough internet access through their proxy, so it's a little bit ugly on that part. So it does need to, especially the ClickOnce application. And then I've also created an Office 365 connector so that I can basically send email through Office 365. There is an SMTP connector. If you're not using Office 365, you can use an SMTP connector. And then is everybody familiar with the SendGrid service that's out there in Azure? So that's a way to send email out of Azure. That's one thing that they didn't actually cater for out of the box for any of the Azure ones, is a email. So you can use the SendGrid. So it looks like we've got our Logic App created. So we do. We'll click on the Logic App. And we go to the All Settings and Triggers and Actions. And that brings up our design surface. And so we've got some choices here. We'll talk a little bit later on the templates, but what I'm going to do is I'm just going to create from scratch. So basically it gives me an empty Logic App. And you'll see over here in my BizTalk Bill 01, let me just resource group, I've got the work item API that I uploaded just a minute ago. I have my Office 365 connector, my file connector. I've got a service bus connector, so that's how we're going to get the messages. And then I have a file connector bad. I just wanted to show you a little bit of debugging when the file connector just does not want to cooperate or you've mistyped things. So basically, we go back to there. What you do is you click on the connector that you want. That adds it to the application, and it's going to ask me for some configuration information. So the service bus connector works on a polling time interval. The default, I think, is an hour. This demo would take a lot longer if I did that, so I want it to fire when there's a message available. And so I'll set the frequency down to a minute, and then you need to click the little green checkbox to set that, and now it's saying, okay, add your next step. So I'll go ahead and add the work item updated. And then basically it's got my one git operation in that, which is my, and what it's asking for. You remember that input C# class I showed you? That's what it's asking for here. So it's asking for the content, and that's showing me the content that's available so far in my Logic App. So the Azure Service Bus connector presents the content transfer encoding, and the content type. So all I want is the content and then the content transfer. Now, by default, Service Bus does serialized messages. So you can send your .NET class as a serialized, and it wraps a serializer around it. You can send just a string, but it tends to wrap string serialization around it. The TFS service hooks has a little checkbox that says send it as an unserialized string. And if I did it as a serialized string, I would have had to write another API app to deserialize the JSON. So I'm using that little checkbox that says it's sending it as a string. Now the attachment status, it's a type in field, and that's approved. And then the email status is committed, and then I need my Visual Studio Online user account that I've set up out there. And there's a special, you go into security of Visual Studio Online and you'll create a service account user, and it gives you a long token. So I'm going to grab my information for that. So it's my demo download user, and then I've got a nice big long token in there for that user. So basically right now I could receive a message off of the service bus. It'll go into my component and run. I can go ahead and, So the designer needs a little bit of work because you didn't notice that little green check. So you have to go chase that little green check. Now it'll let me save that. So it's saved those. It's happy with all the configuration settings. We'll go ahead now and we're going to add the file connector, or the Office 365 connector, sorry. And it's going to come back and probably ask me to authorize. So it needs to get information that allows it to send email via Office 365. So I click that, pops up a little dialog, asks for my logon and password to my Office 365 account. Now, if you're doing this in production, you're not going to use probably your Office 365 this way. You'll probably use the SMTP connector via SendGrid or something like that. So now it's validated me on there, and now it's given me the actions I can do with the Office 365 connector. And we're going to do the send email. And it needs a 2. I'm going to use one of my other email accounts, so bill@chestnut.net. And then the subject is going to be work item committed. And then the body is going to be, and you'll notice I've got some more stuff in this context menu now. It has the outputs of my API app. And it's my email. And then I'll go ahead and click OK on that. So what I need to do now is I only want to send the email when it is a committed and I've outputted an email. So I go up here and I add a condition. Now, before I do that, let me just go back to here. Let's go and save that. Go into the code view. This is a little thing that they've got broken at the moment. This is the JSON code. Don't worry too much about the rest of it. I just want to show you this one particular thing. Is at the moment, this, zoom it. So at the moment, we've got a condition down there at the bottom of the Office 365 connector that says it depends on the previous shape. Okay? And that will guarantee that if something fails earlier, this won't run. So like if the service bus connector got an error and my API app didn't run, it wouldn't try to run the email connector. But as you'll see in a second, when I go in there, back into the designer, go here and add a condition, and just so that I don't mistype it, I'm going to grab the condition. Oh, that's not the right one. And that's basically is that the work item updated output type has set to email. So I'll go in there and I'll paste that into there. And then I will save that. So now the only time that my Office 365 connector is going to execute is when it comes in as an email. And then what I'll do is I'll go add my file connector. And I'm going to upload a file. And the file path I'm actually creating, and that's that second field. It's a little bit hard. This dialog needs a lot of work because you can't see the end of that, which tells me it's the file name. But if I go up here and I go to arrow out, we'll see it's the attachment file name I'm creating. And then I'm going to give it the content, which is the first field, which is the attachment. And then I'm going to set the encoding to base 64. I'll go ahead and save that. And now the only time I want to upload the file is when I've put out the file out of my API app. So I go in here and I add another condition. I'll go grab that condition, which is the attachment. Now, I could have made the talk basically completely around this workflow language. There's a whole page of stuff around that. But it's one of those things that you're not going to remember if I show it to you today. You're going to have to go to the help page anyway to do it. It's a very unique language. I don't know where they've got it from, but they've kind of pretty much made it themselves, it looks to me like. So now you'll notice that it moved that file connector below my 365 connector, because those two events will happen at different conditions. So now I can go ahead and save. And if I go ahead and close all of these windows, go back to here. And I had one message out in the service bus queue, so as soon as I saved that first one, it processed it. But I'll go ahead and go back into my backlog item. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to open my work item. I'm going to change its status to committed, and it's got a attachment, just sample.zip on that, and I'm going to do a save and close. Hop back to our work item updated, and we'll see that it does take it a while. If you want to find out what it's doing, you can scroll down here and look at the trigger history. And what you'll see in here is every time that 1 minute trigger is fired and whether anything came back or not. And that's when you get that value in the column fired, said that trigger fired. And the portal doesn't update as good as it should. So sometimes you have to go back here and a couple of times. This is running on a minute, so basically you might have to go a couple of times here before it shows up. And let's go look at the trigger history. It's running now, that's right. Or it failed, actually. That's good. Let's see, what did it fail? So the Office 365 connector failed. Okay. So gives me a little bit extra debugging that we can do here. And so basically, if we look at that, and it's got no inputs and outputs. That's a good one. So let's look at the output from my application, the API app, and we'll see the inputs. And again, we don't need to zoom too much. I'll zoom in a little bit on that. The bottom, you'll see that it passes the output from our service bus, which is the content. And then basically it's got the information that I did where it did the attachment status and the VSO user, things like that. So not sure why that did that. We'll hop back into it in a second. So when I do some debugging stuff, we'll figure out what it's doing in that. So let's hop back to the slides real quick. So we've got our Logic app out there. So one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit about is they are coming up with templates. So they're going to have some pre-made templates that have several API apps already set up for you. And you're going to be able to create those too. They'll also be in the marketplace. So if you've got something where you've got processing a SAP message or something like that that a lot of your enterprise devs need to do, you can set that template up out there. They can just go out there. They can select the template. It'll place all those API apps on there with the conditions that you've set up and things like that. So that'll help that level of reuse. You'll be able to do things a lot easier, a lot quicker on that. And also, like I said, they're going to put that in the marketplace so that you can leverage that. So now what we want to do is talk a little bit about debugging. So we saw that failed before. Let me swap back to our here, and what I'll do is I'll do the go back into Visual Studio. I'll go over here and to my Cloud Explorer, and I'll go over here in my code. I'll set a breakpoint right here. Let the Cloud Explorer refresh, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to find my API app, and I'm going to attach the debugger to that API app if the Cloud Explorer decides to refresh. Come on. That's the only problem doing demos where you're connected to the internet. Yes. So they've made it very hard to do the metadata out of the box. So Nick Heppelson, Nick from QuickLearn wrote the T-Rex library that obfuscates a lot of that detail. So if we go and look, that didn't find what it was supposed to. That's got just a storage account. That's not going to work. Now, there we go. API apps. Let me just go ahead and get this debugger started. So we'll see. We can have a little bit of a look later on at the metadata you put there, whether you want it to show up in the advanced settings or whether you want to show up in the default settings and some default values and things like that. Hopefully, they're going to make it easier so that T-Rex library is not going to be required later on, but it just depends. I haven't seen anything that they've done around that. So what we're going to do now is we're firing up the debugger so that we can get in and do live debugging on our API app. Now, this does take a while sometimes. Sometimes it just flashes right up instantly into the debug mode. Sometimes it can't configure the debug mode. Okay, let's try this one more time. And you do have to remember that when you do the publish, that you have to put it into debug instead of release. Otherwise, it just can't set the debugger. Come on. So the other thing we're going to look at is some of the PowerShell commands to get around what's in your subscription, find all that information out of the subscription, things like that. And we might have to go on to that if this debugger just refuses to connect. With websites, I've had the same issues with it. It sometimes connects, sometimes it takes you two or three goes to connect the debugger to it. It's in the internet. This should be good because this machine's sitting in Australia East and this subscription is in Australia East, so it should be going inside of Azure. You would hope that that would be pretty quick inside the same data center, but it's not going to debug. Sorry about that. I'll try to come back to that if I've got a little bit of time left over, but basically, let's hop back to the other slides. So basically, I can set breakpoints in there. I can hop into the code. I can drop a message in. I can see it fire. It did set. Okay, so let's go back to our backlog, and I'll go ahead and open that. And we'll go in here. We'll make it, we'll make the status approved. And then I'll do a save and close. Go back to Visual Studio. And it will take a couple minutes to come back to that. So I'm now in debug. So I've got the debug in there. I can go up here now on my input and do a add watch. And I can go here and then I could go into my XAML or the JSON and do the JSON visualizer. And I can actually look at all the different fields in that JSON object. That's a new thing they added in 2015 Visual Studio, is that visualizer. And then I can go here and hit continue and go on with my application. So basically it gives me the ability to debug that in a real-time mode, seeing what the data is. Because I noticed in the Visual Studio when I went to set up the service hooks, they've got a new JSON file. So I had to make sure I picked the older JSON file so that it didn't break the connections that I was working on. So let's go back to the slides real quick, because I think I've only got about 5 minutes left. So that was a little bit on the debugging. You can spend a lot more time in the debugging, but basically it gets you into your API app. You can set debugging all the way across all of your logic apps, so if you want to see how it goes between the different ones, that's fine. So now a little bit of the tips and tricks. How many people sit in on Emil's session yesterday on the resource manager? So basically, you can deploy all of this Logic Apps, API apps via the resource manager. And there is a Visual Studio project to do that. And it gives you a PowerShell script to run to deploy into the Azure. So, and you can also, it's parameterized, so you could have the dev JSON settings and UAT and prod and be able to have those run. And then again, if you set in on Donovan Brown's DevOps session, you'll see that the new build technology, then the new release manager, anything you can do from a command line, you can do. So you could run this in there to be able to deploy to your different environments. So we're going to hop back into the demo real quick and have a quick look at the PowerShell. So what I've got in there is, with the PowerShell, I need to, at the moment, because there's two different modes that the Azure commands are available, I need to go into resource manager mode. Then I need to log on, so grab the account information. And that's going to prompt me with a dialogue. And that'll come back and show me the subscriptions under that. So I've only got one subscription under that particular account. Then I'll go in and I can look at all of the resources in that particular resource group. And there's a lot. Yeah, I only saw like five things there, but there's a lot more. So basically what we've got in there is that we'll see that, let me just scroll up a little bit and then zoom. And we'll see that we've got things like a server farm. Didn't want to do that. Back. So if we go here, we'll see that we've got a server farm, and that's part of the app service plan that gets set up. Then we've got our gateways. So all of our API apps that are interacting with the outside world go through a gateway. Then we've got our API app that we did. So you can see all of those different things in there. And what I can do too is I'm going to take and I need to update this last one here to be work item updated 2. And then I'll grab this PowerShell. And what I can do with it is I can actually, and that's actually going to take the Logic App out and create a JSON file. So if we go out here into this directory now, we'll see that there is a logicapp.json file, and I can open that with Visual Studio. And then, so I can actually read it, Control-KD. And so basically that's what we were looking at a minute ago, those actions. And then our conditions. There's our conditions. Let me just zoom in a little bit on that. There's our parameters and our conditions, our work item committed, things like that. So that is that Now, what I've been asking the product team for is a way to do all of this. It's bringing back bits and pieces. So I could go and I can run another command that basically will take and bring out the API apps. And then in Visual Studio, there's a project for just a logic app, and there's a project, a resource template project for logic apps and API apps all in one. And that's what you really want when you're going to move them between environments. So let's just, that's the PowerShell commands that we want to look at. So in the portal, we've looked at a little bit of this already, but basically I'm pretty much close to out of time. And so we've looked at a little bit of the portal. If you want to look at it, just catch me a little bit afterwards. We can look at the service plan that you need to set up with the resource group, and then your API apps and your logic apps. You can basically go in there and browse which ones are in which resource groups. The picture for moving between subscriptions is not as good as it should be. You should be able to just export that stuff and then deploy it to the other environment. So I'm hoping before it goes out of preview that we'll see a lot more of that stuff around how to move between subscriptions. Now, the API apps, because they're based on website, you can do the Git repository or TFS, so when you check it in, it will push it up, just like you can with websites. So we're going to skip that one real quick and just talk a little, just go kind of through my summary. So basically, we've looked at how we create an API app out of the box. We can use the ones that they already have, but we can create one out of the box. It's a web API. We give it the inputs and the outputs we want to send. We create a logic app by taking those API apps, either the ones we created or the ones that are available for us, and do that. So where would you start on this? So basically, what I would do, if you're really interested in this, pick a fairly simple process that you have, maybe something you've got a file coming in from the outside. You need to do some manipulation on it, and then you need to drop it inside of your environment. That's an ideal one with the file connector, things like that. The other one that is probably helpful, if you don't have BizTalk and you need to talk EDI with people, you can do, there's the EDI components that are available, and that will translate that EDI document from the ugly text format that EDI lives in into an XML document, and then you could drop that on the service bus, receive that inside of your enterprise, do some processing with it, send it back up through the service bus. It'll translate it from your XML document back into the EDI document and send it out. So those are like kind of the good scenarios. Now, the what's next is the really interesting one. This is a preview product. And as we have seen, even over the last, 2 months, they have just changed it a lot. They just released the SDK so that you can interact with it. They've added do while inside of that, the logic app. So you could get there's a Twitter connector. It brings down tweets, and you can loop through the tweets inside of that. There is no designer support for the do while. You have to do it in the JSON file. So there's still a little bit of work on that. I will really hope they build a designer that lives in Visual Studio. There are my contact details if you want to get in touch with me. Any questions about that? If you're interested in having a look at it and have a production scenario that you might want to use, give me a holler and we can talk about what you need to do. There's one other session that you might want to look at is the advanced messaging that Dan Rosanova is doing at 11:55 today. A few resources out there. I think you've seen the same slide on pretty much all of the talks. And please complete your evaluation. And thank you very much for getting up early on Friday morning.